Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Callum Borchers. Let's hear now a bit of congressional testimony about one of the pressing issues of our time.
Despite the continuing uncertainties about the specific regional impacts of a global warming trend, there is a very high risk of irreversible and catastrophic impact looming on the horizon.
There's a message that sounds like it could have been delivered on Capitol Hill today, but it's actually from 1988 and Rhode Island's then Congresswoman Claudine Schneider. Here's a little more.
We have the facts. We have the policies that are appropriate to reducing global warming. And I think that we have had far too much rhetoric on the part of our federal agencies, on the part of Congress. As far as I'm concerned, the crisis is here. The time to move from rhetoric into action is also here. And I am hopeful that my colleagues will move with me into action instead of sitting on our hands and waiting for the situation to get even hotter.
Oh, and I should also mention, Congresswoman Schneider was a Republican. So as Democrats push for a Green New Deal, how did the GOP become the party of climate change skepticism and, in some cases, outright denial? Let's ask Congresswoman Claudine Schneider herself. She served in the House as Rhode Island's first female member of Congress from 1981 until 1991, and she joins us now from Boulder, Colorado. Congresswoman Schneider, welcome to Radio Boston.
So happy to be with you, Callum. I appreciate your invitation.
Well, we're so happy to have you. And I'm wondering from where we stand today, you know, we've got the U.S. leaving the Paris Climate Accord, a lot of Republican pushback against this Green New Deal, some within the Democratic Party, too, I should say. And so I'm wondering, you know, if you could bring us back to what the climate conversation was like in the 1980s when you were in Congress.
In the 1980s, on the Science, Research, and Technology Committee, there was bipartisan understanding that climate was a real challenge. And actually, I felt that here I am in a position of power, and I have a moral obligation to act in the best interest of all the people. And many of my colleagues of both parties took that sentiment to heart. And so I introduced the Global Warming Prevention Act, which was an omnibus bill, which would partially educate members of Congress and also the general public about there's no silver bullet. Each of us have a responsibility to be part of the solution. And needless to say, parts of the bill passed. Those of you who go to buy a refrigerator or a washing machine and you figure out what the operating costs are by looking at the Energy Star rating, that was all part of our energy efficiency legislation. So when I told the appliance manufacturers that they had the capability to be more energy efficient, their first reaction was, no, it's going to cost too much. But then I said, too bad. I know that technologically you can do this because our national labs have indicated that it's possible, so let's do it. So in the end, they agreed to support my legislation. Today, however, the Republican Party has not only not held hearings in the Science Committee, I shouldn't say today, I should say before the midterm. So thank heavens, the old guard of the Republican Party in the House, many of whom have lost their seats, but now at least we're holding hearings in the Science and Technology Committee. But you asked the question, why has the Republican Party shifted?
Yeah.
I have one answer for you. Money. They have been bought off by the fossil fuel industry. And if it's a congressman from Virginia or Mitch McConnell from Kentucky, where they have the coal or some of the oil and fracking interest, there's a very clear correlation. There's a reason there's the phrase, follow the money. Because if you do, you will see that the voting correlates with those major contributors to the Republican Party. And most of them happen to be in the fossil fuel regions of our country.
Well, as we're talking about this shift of your party over time, I'm hoping that you'll journey with me down the timeline of that with the help of a little bit of archival tape. So walk with me here, Congresswoman Schneider. Let's go back to 2008. We've got the Republican nominee that year, John McCain, putting out this political ad touting his record on climate change.
John McCain stood up to the president and sounded the alarm on global warming 5 years ago. Today, he has a realistic plan that will curb greenhouse gas emissions.
I'm John McCain, and I approve this message.
All right, fast forward 4 years. In 2012, the GOP nominee is former Massachusetts governor and now the Utah Senator Mitt Romney. He says this.
My view is that we don't know what's causing climate change on this planet. And the idea of spending trillions and trillions of dollars to try and reduce CO2 emissions is not the right course for us.
And then fast forward one more time to the last election cycle. Here's then-candidate, now President Donald Trump, at a South Carolina rally in 2015.
So Obama's talking about all of this with the global warming and that. A lot of it's a hoax. It's a hoax. I mean, it's a money-making industry, okay? It's a hoax. A lot of it.
All right, Congresswoman Schneider. So how about that? That's not that long a period of time, right? But in 08, we've got John McCain not just being asked about it at a debate or something, but sort of voluntarily talking about climate change. You have Mitt Romney being maybe a little bit skeptical, and then Donald Trump, it's a hoax. What's going on there?
Well, John McCain did his homework. Mitt Romney obviously did not. And I can't even speak to the incumbent president because I think at this point, all citizens know that he says whatever he finds expedient for his own personal advantage. And the reality is the cost of inaction on climate change are just daunting. I mean, between 1980 and 2018, we're talking about 238 climate-related disasters totaling $1.5 trillion. So don't tell me that the remedies are going to be more expensive than that. And that's not even discussing the loss of life that has occurred. So when you look at risk, and Republicans are ignoring all risks, but at least the Department of Defense has not, they are spending substantial amounts of money so that they will be prepared. And they look at climate change as a national security concern. Not too long ago, the Federal Reserve also came out and they said that the banks need to do climate stress tests because many of the loan losses that are occurring at the banks are coming from bankruptcies, from wildfires, from drought storms, extreme weather, et cetera, et cetera. And agricultural losses, commodity price spikes, that sort of thing. So the messengers are substantial. We should not be listening to Republican politicians at this point, except Governor Weld, who is running against President Trump in a primary, has indicated that he is supportive of action on climate change. But the bottom line is, whether it's the American Medical Association, who came out in support of action back in 2016, or whether it's the Defense Department or the economists who have also made it real clear we need to move ASAP, there's urgency here. There was urgency 30 years ago, but now we're realizing the impact of our inactions.
We're talking about climate change and the GOP with former Rhode Island Congresswoman Claudine Schneider, herself served as a Republican. And I'm wondering, Congresswoman, if you see any other bright spots within your party on climate change. You mentioned Bill Weld, who is challenging President Trump. I'm also thinking of Senator Lamar Alexander of Tennessee. He's not seeking re-election, but he is offering something that he calls a New Manhattan Project for Clean Energy, which is a 5-year plan to reduce carbon emissions and create cleaner energy sources. I mean, is it also bleak in the GOP?
Pretty much so. I mean, Governor Hogan, who is from Maryland, is also positive on climate. And I think it is very bleak within the Republican Party. The president chose to say that this is a hoax, and his enablers have followed, including the Republican National Committee. So the leadership there is minuscule by comparison. But I think that the other detriment that is currently going on in the political environment is the divisiveness. And so just for a bit, Callum, let's not look at the parties. Let's look in the mirror and say, what can I do about climate change? Because if we sit on our hands and wait for the Congress to move some grandiose legislation, we're wasting time. And there are many things that the listeners right now can do, whether they are CEOs of corporations or employees or homemakers. They can all be part of the solution.
Well, on that point, though, I'm curious what kind of guidance you have for individuals, because we've done some reporting here at WBUR, and I've seen elsewhere, too, about changes to recycling standards in a lot of municipalities, you know, and how China, for example, has raised the standard of recyclable equipment that it will buy. And so some cities have had to sort of walk away from their recycling projects for now. That's got to be discouraging for people who want to feel like they're contributing by sorting out their recyclables in the trash every day.
Well, that's the bad news. I'm the good news girl here.
And all right, then let's hear it.
Reality is,
what's the good side?
There is some talk now in a number of different municipalities where they want to receive those recyclable materials and turn them into new products. I mean, you may have heard the phrase cradle to cradle, as opposed to taking a product and then throwing it away. Instead, reusing it and repurposing it and taking the materials and building new products. And there's much of that going on, but on a very low level. The clothing industry is very much now becoming more focused on the circular economy, where, in fact, large retailers like H&M will encourage you to bring a bag of clothing in, whether you bought it at their store or not. They will give you a 15% discount on your next purchase, and they take those materials, recycle them, and if they are clothes that are in good shape, they will be repaired and given to the less fortunate, or they will be shredded and made into new materials and into new clothing. So more of that is starting to take place across the country. So I think that's a plus. But let me send some kudos out to Raytheon right there in your backyard.
Sure.
And also
Staples. Big defense
Staples.
Contractor.
Yeah.
And Staples, yep, big hometown company.
Years ago, EPA wanted corporations to voluntarily agree to reduce their 6 greenhouse gases, just not carbon. And I thought, oh my gosh, I've got to be a part of this. So I was just basically on the phone, round the clock, dialing up corporations, asking them what they're doing with their greenhouse gases. And I put together my own little strategic plan, geographic, also in terms of who are the largest contributors to greenhouse gases, like the cement and steel industries, and I targeted those. And in the end, recruited about 50 corporations who made that commitment to EPA to reduce their greenhouse gases. Well, I would love for you, Callum, to have an interview with someone from Raytheon and Staples and tell the community how much money they've saved as a result of taking those actions, because the corporate world is saving billions upon billions of dollars by reducing their greenhouse gases, in other words, using less energy. I will also say that in the past, I had been an advisor to National Grid because they were interested in looking toward the future, planning on what they should be doing on climate, and I assisted them in that respect. They asked these questions of me at a time when most utilities were digging in their heels and refusing to do anything. So, you know, there is hope from some of the largest contributors to greenhouse gases. But I want to follow up on the individuals. One of the most, and it does tie back into your question that's political, one of the most important things that people can do is to vote with knowledge. And if you're too busy to track your elected officials, which I constantly hear, you can learn the sources of their campaign contributions and follow the money. In addition to that, you can find out how they're ranked by various professional organizations, whether it's the Chamber of Commerce or the labor unions or environmental groups or women's groups. Go to votesmart.org, and it will give you that information, very brief, to the point. It could take you less than 10 minutes to figure out who you want to vote for just by looking at that information. Secondly, everybody can just stop using fossil fuels. Figure it out. If you put enough LEDs in your home and business, if you insulate, then certainly you're moving along on the right path. And also, there are groups in Washington, D.C. right now that are working round the clock to stop the dismantling of the Environmental Protection Agency and to make sure that our clean air and clean water laws are enforced. My favorite is the environmentalintegrity.org organization. So you can most certainly make contributions to those that are on the front lines. You can also take your money out of fossil fuels. I was serving on an environmental board, and I one day asked at the board meeting, where are reserves invested? Well, they said, well, with the bank. And I said, no, in what corporate entities? Well, they weren't certain. Well, from that moment on, I started focusing on divestinvest.org, which is where you can go in order to make sure that your retirement funds are not invested in fossil fuels.
So just jam-packed full of advice there, Claudine Schneider. And just in the brief moments that I have you left, I did want to squeeze this in because a lot of these, we've talked about the Green New Deal, and a lot of female politicians are really out in front on that. And I mentioned you were the first woman to serve in Congress from Rhode Island. We've got 131 women in this latest Congress. So just in the final moments, is this finally the much prophesied year of the woman in politics?
Well, I certainly hope so, because women have a tendency to think more frequently about the future. And all of us, including the women policymakers and the male policymakers, and we as citizens need to think, what kind of world are we leaving our children when it comes to climate change and our grandchildren? So hopefully everybody will roll up their sleeves and get to work.
That's Congresswoman Claudine Schneider, who served as Rhode Island's first female member of Congress from 1981 to 1991. Congresswoman Schneider, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.